Thank you for listening to Ivy Podcast, where we feature weekly leadership conversations with thought leaders and industry experts. Now, here is your host, John Karsibayev.
I'm Don Townsend. For the last 18 years, I've had my own executive and board search consulting practice, and I also coach executives on how to take charge effectively in new roles.
That's great, Don. Thanks so much for making time to join us on the Ivy Podcast today. So give us a thumbnail version of your career prior to, you know, you've been building your organization for quite some time now, but share with us where you've been before. What have you done?
Okay. I think of my career in two phases. The first part of my career, which I call my industry years, I spent in manufacturing companies in the construction industry, the computer industry, and then finally by way of an acquisition with one of the telecommunications giants. The second phase of my career, the part that I'm in now, has been on the consulting side. I spent about 5 years with A.T. Kearney, and then in 2003, I founded my own firm, and it has given me the freedom to do some things that I'm really passionate about. One is helping people find the talent that they need to take advantage of the opportunities in their markets. And the second part of that has been the opportunity to work with a number of executives, CEOs, chief operating officers, chief marketing officers, and general managers to really help them get off to a fast start to really take charge effectively.
Oh, that's very exciting. And thank you for sharing that. In terms of your current organization, tell us a little bit more about its mission. What's the competitive advantage, and how are you guys succeeding in the current market?
Well, it's a small firm. I have two partners, we focus on what I describe as bringing a really high level of service and quality to a small number of assignments. I try to stick to what I think of as the consulting model rather than the transactional model. And in order to do that, we really place an emphasis on thoroughness and preparation. Still very much research focus in our search work, both at the executive and the board levels. The other thing about that is important to us is what I sometimes call breakthrough talent, and that is encouraging organizations to think well beyond replacement for executives who may have left, or for board members who have retired, and to really think what it will take to move their own organization to a higher level of performance, and build that into our work. On the coaching side of the work that I mentioned before, once again, we've tried to bring a real research focus to it. At the very beginning, we interviewed over 300 executives from 9 different countries and just about every industry segment you can think of, plus a few leaders in government and academia, to find out what it was that really made them successful in taking charge of their responsibilities And we've used that as the foundation of our work to help other executives.
Well, that's very interesting. And I would imagine, especially in the current markets, you know, which I want to talk to you a little bit further about, kind of winning that war for talent and war on retention, I would imagine you have some very, very exciting kind of stories to share. But before we do that, tell me a little bit about the different trends and ideas that really excite you these days when it comes to executive search or just in general staffing and recruitment industry overall. What do you think is the next big thing?
Well, one of the things that really excites me is the opportunities that our economy now presents for people who want to thrive in what's often called the gig economy. And that can range from people who work as a Lyft driver while they try to get their own business off the ground, to people who work in consulting organizations because they like the relatively short-term nature of it and the ability to move on to a new challenge in a new industry or something like that. So I think we see a wide range of opportunities for people now to really think through and carve out for themselves the kind of work life that they want to have. I think too, the movement to what you might call agile organizations is very exciting. I think it gives people the opportunity for lots of challenges in their work lives that might not have been open to them in the past. And we've seen lots of organizations, lots of our clients who are taking lessons that they learned in sort of the agile software development world and applying those lessons in other ways in their organization and lots of other functions besides just software development and getting tremendous results from it. And I think one of the reasons they are getting those results is so many people like the environment of being able to form a team and accomplish something quickly and then pass their work off to another group and reform on another team and pick up another challenge. I think a lot of people are finding that kind of organization really fits what they want to do and the way they like to work.
Oh, that's super exciting. And thank you for sharing some of those insights. It's a very interesting period coming out of pandemic and how organizations are structuring. Just overall operations is going to be very interesting how things play out in the next period. And you've mentioned something around, you know, the gig workers, the overall contingent workforce trend that has been on such a rise because organizations, they're seeking those very flexible and lean ways to scale up or scale down. So tell us a little bit more about your thoughts on just the overall future of work concept. Where do you think kind of the contingent worker, gig worker trend is going with that? How can organizations really take advantage of that?
Well, I think one of the real opportunities there is that that you can now, thanks to the technology that we have, access talent all over the world. I've done that in my own business. One of the things that I decided on when I first started was to learn how to use all sorts of non-employee resources to accomplish a lot of the things that traditionally have been full-time jobs in an organization. So I have an administrative assistant in the Philippines, and for marketing collateral, I use somebody who is based in Yugoslavia, and it works. It has worked for me extremely well. So I think organizations can find ways to access talent that just was not available to them in the past. I think that's exciting. A second thing is it allows organizations to get a lot of work that may not be core or strategic for them accomplished at a very low cost. And that allows them to focus more resources on the development of people in the functions and in the roles that are of the most value to them. And I think that is a tremendous opportunity for the companies who take advantage of it.
Right, absolutely. So as you partner with different organizations and you help them find the best candidates, and you work kind of the both sides, you work the hire, you know, you help the hiring organization and also the candidate to prepare for that first interview. Tell us a little bit more about the best strategies that really help you increase your kind of that batting average to make sure that both sides are well prepared, the expectations are set for both the candidate and the hiring managers. Tell us a little bit more about that process.
Well, I think one of the things I learned over the last 20 years or so has been to not focus so much on the classic knowledge, skills, and abilities that we typically think about when we want to hire somebody, but to really drill down with clients on what exactly do you need them to accomplish in the first 12 to 18 months in the new role. And oftentimes clients struggle with this a little bit because they've been thinking about, well, we want somebody that has this degree and this number of years of experience, and we want them to know X, Y, and Z. But when we really focus in on what do you need them to accomplish in that first relatively brief period at the beginning of the role, that would cause you to say, wow, you've been really successful. Then we get to the things that can really help us find someone who fits for that role, because we can look at their past and see if their past experiences and accomplishments line up with what the company needs to accomplish. And it works for the candidates as well, because one, they get a much clearer picture of what the company needs and what they might be hired to do. And so that's one thing I've learned that has really helped. The second one is to be really clear as an organization about what is it that you're good at and what are your flat spots as an organization and what are your aspirations as an organization. People don't expect that they're joining a perfect company. And I think really thinking through and being candid about your strengths, your weaknesses, and your development needs as an organization helps people make a good decision.
No, I'm pretty sure we can spend the rest of the episode talking about this particular topic because it's such an interesting area. And, you know, I hear a lot. In a sense, really, that initial interview is such a great opportunity for both sides to really get to know each other from mm-hmm. the standpoint of, is this the type of leadership I want to be under, or is this the type of environment that I can thrive in both ways? So that's very interesting. Thank you for sharing some of those concepts. As in terms of innovation strategies that, you know, you utilize that really help your client companies succeed when it comes to attracting the top talent. Tell us a little bit more about that. What are the different practical recommendations you have implemented in as part of your process that really help some of these organizations attract the best in terms of the candidates?
Well, one of the things I do is encourage, recommend, sometimes cajole clients to include as a broad array of people in their organization in the selection process. Organizations who include more people in meaningful ways in the selection process simply have better results. The second thing that I suggest to companies is that they don't rely too heavily on interviews. Presentations are a great way to gain insights into a skill set that you don't see if you just do a series of one-on-one interviews. And wherever it's practical, I encourage companies to do what I call a day in the field. Let people see the organization at work, whether it's in a factory or spending a half a day with a sales representative. Anything that you can do to give people a real look at how your company operates in one of its really basic functions is going to allow you to make much better selection decisions.
Oh, that's great. I love these recommendations. And, you know, it's, as you know, with this being such a candidate driven market these days, that war on retention, so to say, is real out there with companies, you know, just coming up with creative ways to really target top performers at various organizations. What are your thoughts on helping your client companies succeed and win when it comes to retaining the top talent?
The first thing I recommend is understand what turnover is costing you. And it doesn't have to be elaborate, just a reasonable back of the envelope calculation that adds up how much time, how much money you're spending on recruiting, and how much money, extra money you're spending on training. And then a reasonable estimate of your lost productivity costs. The hours of time that people in the organization spend in interviews. And you add those up and you share that information and you develop an understanding in the organization of why retention is important in a financial and practical way. So I think that's a good first step. A second thing I recommend that companies do is analyze your turnover. If all of your most or all of your turnover is among the people who are, let's say, in the bottom quarter of your performers, well, don't worry about it so much. Just view that turnover as an opportunity to upgrade. If your turnover is among your best performers and your high potential performers, analyzing that and understanding it will galvanize you to take some action. The third thing that I think is important is to do stay interviews. Almost all organizations do exit interviews. And sure, sometimes you get some insights from exit interviews that can help you in the future. But stay interviews, I think, are a much more powerful tool. Sit down with people and ask them specifically, what is it about your work that you like? What parts of it are frustrating to you? What would you like to do in the future? How can we give you learning and development opportunities that are meaningful to you? But just the very concept of doing stay interviews starts to change your mindset in the organization about retention. And my experience with the clients who have done them, and I've even been asked by some clients to assist in doing the stay interviews, is that they're very powerful. They send the message that you value the people, that you want them to stay, and that you're willing to do what you can to make their life at work more enjoyable, more challenging, more developmental for them. Recognition. is another thing that that is very important in retaining employees. I think of it simply as catching people doing something right and letting them know about it. And when an organization has a good balance of team-based recognition for groups that that have accomplished something significant, as well as individual recognition efforts, and I'm not talking about bonuses or money. Those can be a part of it, but just disciplining yourself as an organization to catch people doing something right and acknowledging it goes a long way to keeping people in your organization.
Right, absolutely. Those are great recommendations, Don. In terms of you staying ahead of the different trends and, you know, sources that you utilize on a daily basis to learn for self-actualization, share with us what is your content diet is looking like these days? What do you consume on a daily basis?
Well, on a daily basis, I don't get the opportunity to do it, but one of the things that is most important to me is plant tours. I'm always asking organizations that I work with to give me a tour of their manufacturing plant or their distribution facility or even their office environment to see how their people work, how they interact with each other, and to find out from the people who make the product what they think about it and what they think of the organization. I've been very fortunate. I've got to tour some really magnificent manufacturing and distribution facilities. Second thing I do on a daily basis, because of the nature of my work, I get to listen to a wide variety of people, and I try to learn from every one of them. Then there are some things that I look at every day. One of them is Supply Chain Brain, which is just a digest of trends and information about all aspects of supply chains, whether it's technology or breakdowns in supply chain. I find that very interesting. I try once or twice a year to go to a trade show. Just walking through a trade show, talking to people in the different booths is a great way for me to learn. And I read a lot of books. Not surprising, given the nature of what I do, I like to read biographies. And I almost always have a biography going. And then there are a couple of books that I've read fairly recently that I really think are important books. They're books that had an impact on me. One of them is The Power of Resilience. And it was published about 4 or 5 years ago. But I think organizations now, right after the pandemic, as we return to more normal times, it's a great opportunity to think about what we got right as we had to adjust rapidly to the pandemic, and what we could have done better, and that book gives a lot of good ideas about how you can build a more resilient organization. And the second one is it's called Lead Yourself First. And it's about the importance of solitude for leaders to have some regular disciplined way of reflecting on what's going on in your organization and your area of responsibilities and making meaning from that. And as the book points out, some people do it by long distance running, and some people do it like George Shultz, the former Secretary of State, starting with his first management job as Dean of the Business School at the University of Chicago. He would carve out 1 hour a week and sit alone in his office or conference room with nothing but a pen and a tablet and focus on the most important issues or challenges that that were facing him. And he maintained that discipline all through his years as Secretary of State. So really over 40 years, he used that disciplined approach to solitude to help him be a better leader.
Those are great recommendations. Much appreciated. And for our listeners, we'll make those titles available in the show notes. Don, I can't thank you enough for your time today. It was very short and very insightful conversation. I personally learned quite a bit. What I love doing with all of the guests is do another follow-up recording in about a year, revisit the conversation from a year ago and see how much of change transpired and talk about the different ideas that are still relevant. So definitely appreciate your time today.
Thank you, John.
Thank you for listening to the Ivy Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to our RSS feed on ivypodcast.com and all major podcasting platforms like Spotify and iTunes. As always, if you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a rating on iTunes.